the light within. One of the most profound verses of the Chandogya Upanishad, which is one of the oldest. The two Upanishads that are generally thought to be the oldest, Chandogya and Brihadaranyaka. And we'll talk about both of them today. The basic question that generally is in the back of our minds in dealing with this world is, what is all this? What is it that we are being faced with every day, every moment? And we come to the conclusion pretty quickly that the surface aspects of our existence are extremely important from a relative standpoint, from an immediate standpoint. What is important immediately now on the surface of things? But we also know that everything that is on the surface is going to disappear. So of an ultimate nature, you cannot say that anything that we experience is of an ultimate nature. And there's a deep yearning inside human consciousness for understanding what is the ultimate nature of things, what is the reality of things. At the core, at its very core, at its very heart, what is all this? The surface is pretty well studied by science, and a great many astonishing things have been discovered about the surface. But really the explanation has not come forth, because whatever science manages to come up with, and indeed many remarkable things have been discovered, many profound ideas have changed our conception of this world, basically. But the ultimate thing, the ultimate question really has eluded us. Because everything that science discovers, one can always ask the question, well, what is that made of? This is the essence of what we perceive. What is that made of? Oh, it's made up of this and that. Okay, then what is that made up of? We never come to the answer, to the final answer. We come to plenty of intermediate answers, which are very useful and give us a lot of not only knowledge, but a lot of benefits, practical benefits. But the ultimate idea has eluded us. Now, in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, there's a famous dialogue which exemplifies this thing. What is the reality at the heart of everything? Actually, there are two dialogues in the Upanishad. One of them is the question, what serves as life, what serves as light for a person? And the answer that is given, this is dialogue between an emperor, Janaka, and a sage who has come to visit him. The emperor asks him what serves as light for a person. Kim Jyotirayam, what is this light? What serves as light for a person? And the sage says, of course, the sun serves as light. Naturally, everything we see is a reflection of the presence of the sun. Well, next question. Suppose now the sun has gone down. What serves as light for a person? Well, of course, the moon will serve as light. Okay, that's fine. When the sun has gone down, it's night. Naturally, the moon is there. Stars are there. All right, the sun has gone down, the moon has set. What serves as light? Oh, fire serves as light. Yes, we can take fire and we can, of course, for us, we would say, no, we don't use fire. It's it's too, you know, we've gotten beyond that. We've made flashlights and we've discovered ways to generate electricity and this and that. And so we have lights of many different types. Okay, that's fine. But suppose all this, for some reason, isn't possible. You say, well, that's a very theoretical question. Not at all theoretical. If you lived at our retreat in Olima every winter, you'd find it's not at all theoretical. This happens, a tree falls somewhere, or something happens, electricity goes out. Okay. Now, what serves as light then, when all these sources of light have stopped? So fire serves as light. Now we're terribly concerned about fire because fire has other implications. Well, he goes on, sound serves as light. If there's no fire available, how do you navigate in pure darkness? You listen for sounds and you're able to feel your way. Okay, suppose that also is not available. There's no sound, there's no, you're in utter darkness. There's, none of these things are available. What serves as light? How do you orient yourself? Then finally, the answer is the self, the inner reality, the inner essence of our being guides us. And, of course, you can say, well, he should have said this first because the inner essence of our being guided us all through the others also. Through the inner essence of our being, our own intelligence, our own inner consciousness, we were able to use the sunlight, we were able to use the moonlight, we were able to use fire, we were able to use sound to locate ourselves. So it's quite clear. There's an inner consciousness, an inner awareness, an inner something very down deep at the heart of things that gives us direction, that gives us light, that gives us understanding. But the question still is, what is that? What is that reality, that inner self-awareness, that ultimate, when you subtract everything else and you have, is there something you finally come to that you cannot subtract away? You cannot even imagine is subtracted away. So that was the, he says, this is the self, the inner reality anyway, but the question still remains, what is that? Then the second conversation was between a great sage, a woman named Gargi, and that same sage, Yajnavalkya. And she asks, what pervades all of this? It's basically the same question. What pervades all of this? So various intermediate answers are given, and finally, the final answer is Space pervades all of this. Yes, I mean, if you've considered scientific things even a little, you'll know that in every scientific situation, one of the basic things that is established is the coordinate system. How do you describe anything in science? You describe it by its location in space and time, and how that location alters under the influence of certain dynamics, certain forces, certain energies. So you can, when you come to the very basis of things, what is the very basis? You finally come to the coordinate system. This is the that to which everything is referred. But then, so he says the Akasha, which means that which contains everything, the space, is that which is the essence of everything. It's at the heart of everything. It's needed to describe things. If you subtract that, you have nothing. The problem itself becomes moot. But then she asks the further question, which is the astounding, which brings in this astounding revelation. What is that which pervades space? In other words, what is the reality of the utmost that we can conceive of as a reality? And his answer was, you could say, well, the answer is a name, it's a word. We still haven't defined it because we're not able to define it. He says it is Brahman, which is the essence of the essence of the essence of all the essences. But the question still remains, what is that? Because we're talking about it, we're not experiencing it. If we can experience it, we go beyond all. There's no need for any description. If you experience a beautiful scene, you're standing on top of a mountain and you're seeing a tremendous panorama in front of you. Someone asks you, well, you know, some of you are talking on your cell phone. Of course, everybody's always talking on their cell phones. And someone asks you, well, okay, you're there, but I'm not there. Can you describe to me? So he takes his cell phone, takes a picture, and goes all around this. And then you see a two-dimensional view. That still doesn't seem like you've seen anything very essential. So the question is, how do you describe that experience? Someone who's standing on top of that mountain is trying to tell you what it looks like, and the best they can do is show you a two-dimensional view, which says, oh yes, okay, it's nice, but that feeling of reality, that feeling of excitement, of interest, of profundity doesn't come. So the only thing is, it's nothing we can describe to anybody else. That is the conclusion that comes to it. We cannot simply sit back in our easy chair and lean back and enjoy whatever we're doing and tell someone, give me a knowledge of reality. What is reality like? And they will tell you a verbal description. But you won't be able to understand it. You won't know. In other words, what is that real experience? When you subtract everything else, what is that experience? That is what we're trying to determine. And this is what the Upanishads attempt to tell us, to talk to us about. So how do you, first when you get to down to the very most fundamental principle, what is the most fundamental thing that one can finally bring everything down to? So The Upanishad, the Chandogya Upanishad, says existence. Sadeva somya idam agra asit sat. Existence alone was there in the beginning. But then that same person admits, well, some people say non-existence was there, asat. Non-existence was there in the beginning. But how could it be that non-existence was there? That itself is a contradiction in terms. It's only a verbal objection. The word sat, sat eva somya idam agra asit sat, existence sat alone was there in the beginning. And then you say, well, suppose non-existence was there in the beginning. In other words, maybe in the beginning there was nothing. By its very definition, if you say in the beginning there was nothing, nothing could have come out of it. Ex nihilo nihil fit, it's an ancient Latin proverb, not that the Latin has anything profound about it in a particular way, but the idea was from nothing you cannot, how do you get, if it's really nothing, then how is it possible for anything to even observe that nothing? So the idea to say that in the beginning there was nothing is, we're talking now intellectually, we're not experiencing that reality or unreality. In the beginning, it could not have been nothing. That is the statement that this Upanishad makes. In the beginning, whatever name you give it, it was something, or it was existence itself. It was the most abstruse an abstract definition. So when you trace science back to its very beginning, going beyond what the area that science usually covers, and science has gotten to the end of it, when you get down to protons, electrons, neutrons, quarks, and this and that, finally they come to vibrating strings. But they've come to something which by their own definition is impossible to verify. It's of such a, it has such characteristics that it couldn't possibly be observed. But the Upanishad makes this distinction that sat and asat, it makes a decision, sat is existence. There must have been something indescribable at the very beginning. That is all a logical statement. It's nothing that is experienced spiritually at this level. But one thing that it does say is it gives us an incentive to try to reach the essence of things, to try to reach the heart of things. And at the heart of things, we must discover something. That is the statement that's made. And that something, it is admittedly beyond words, but in as close a way of describing it, they say, sat chit ananda, it is existence, it is consciousness, it is bliss. So in the beginning, there was something. In other words, our quest to find the origin, to find the most essential description of what exists, is not a vain quest. That is a statement that's being uttered in the Upanishad. They, on the basis of the experience of these sages, they find that at the ultimate limit of understanding, you don't come up with zero. There is such a thing. That reality, as in further ages, was given so many names. God, the Spirit, the Buddha, nature, all these different names were given to it. But there is something, in other words, our quest is not in vain. We want to get down to the heart of things, and there is a goal, there is a light at the end of the tunnel, there is something to be achieved, there is something to be understood, there's something to be experienced. And that is the first and the basic and the most profound support for our life. Our present life, no matter what it consists of, no matter how wonderful it is or how ineffective or how insubstantial or whatever negative aspects you want to describe it with, our present life, our present existence is underlaid with something profound. There is a divine reality, divine being in the sense of unlimited. Because whatever is at the basis of the limited must itself be unlimited. There's no way of describing a boundary to that. If you put a boundary on it, there's something beyond the boundary. So you still say there is. The fact that you say something has a boundary immediately implies there's something beyond the boundary. So there's no possibility of there not being an infinite reality to be experienced. And the fact is that that infinite reality is the essence of every finite thing that we experience. So God is the essence of all of our experiences. Everything, every moment, that background which we find as a very abstract concept, by the very fact that we have described it as it's described in the Upanishad, shows that it has to be at the background of everything. Every experience, every moment is filled with the presence of that. Every moment is filled with the presence of God. That is the conclusion that comes from these references in these Upanishads. They want to penetrate to the very essence of things. They want to be more scientific than the most scientific explorers of the present day. Gargi, in another conversation, asks these questions: what is the essence of this? What is the essence of that? Finally, at the very uttermost point where he, as I was referring to, where you get to space, there is, one thinks this is the essence. I've now come to the essence of everything. I've defined what it is. She says, what is the essence of that? What is the essence of the essences? So the point is that there is such a thing. He tells her, yes, that is Brahman. That, now, what is the immediate implication of that? Its immediate practical implication is everything, it is the essence of everything. It is the screen on which everything that we perceive is projected. It is that out of which all of our experiences are made. We think that we see material objects. But when we look at the essence of the material objects, we try to find what they are. We cannot stop before that spiritual reality, infinite, eternal reality. So what is the proof of the existence of God? The proof is that we exist and everything else is seen to exist. The fact that anything exists, its very existence is, the screen on which it appears in our consciousness, the the matrix in which we refer to it in our conversation or in our thought is that divine reality. We never experience anything except God. Every single experience is an experience of that essence, is an experience of what we call the infinite, the eternal, is an experience of God. That is the basis of our meditation. The question is, when you sit for meditation, the general instruction is you imagine a light in the region of the heart. This is in the Upanishad, Katha Upanishad. Imagine a light within, in the region of the heart, and in that light you imagine the presence of the most precious symbol that you have, that you can conceive of, and you concentrate upon that. And what is the reason for that? Because that symbol that you're concentrating on is the purest essence that you can conceive. Each person will have his or her own. But it is the purest essence, the most essential concept in our life. And the truth of that, the essence of that, the light within that is that infinite light. So when we concentrate upon that within, we're getting as close as we can to a meditation upon the reality itself. And the reality then, when we are denying the substantiality of it, we're denying the physical and intellectual parts of it, the spiritual reality is what remains. And the meditation is to emphasize the existence of the spiritual reality and to try to get within the meaning of the physical and intellectual and see that at the heart of it all, it is a divine reality. So this is the light within. And now there are many descriptions of that. And so we want to go a little bit into that, what the Upanishads and what the Gita describe. It isn't always described in terms of light. Sometimes it's described in other ways as a special reality in various forms. The point is, whatever it is that we imagine, we cannot imagine that which is the essence of all imagination. So we use a symbol and we strive to make that reality manifest itself in our consciousness. That's a really very clever method. I don't know how this was initially set up, this idea of meditation, but the concept behind it is you're using that which is physical and intellectual, which obviously is not the essence you're looking for, but is at the core of this is the essence you're looking for. So by concentrating on the surface of it, one is that reality is able to manifest itself. So this is expressed in so many different ways. In the Bhagavad Gita, for instance, Sarvam sarveshu bhuteshu dishtantam parameshwaram. Parameshwara, this the supreme reality. Samam in the same way, sarveshu, in all bhuteshu, in all beings, tishtantam, standing or abiding. He, yapashyati, sapashyati, he who sees, pashyati, he who sees, in the same way, in all beings, that supreme reality existing in all beings, the imperishable within everything that perishes, he who sees that, he really sees. The point is, because that itself, what we're trying to realize is the essence of the person who's trying to realize it, and the essence of everything else. So we use symbolism in order to find that. So seeing in all beings, what I see in beings normally is the physical aspect, and I infer the intellectual aspect, I infer the mind. But actually what my goal is to see the spirit, to see God, to see the infinite, to see the basis, to see the back, the reality at the back of everything, at the heart of everything. Somehow in the Katha Upanishad it said the Lord created the senses going outward. The Lord caused an injury to the senses by creating them to look outward, and so we don't perceive that is which is the inner reality of everything. So those are the senses we have, that's the mind we have, so we have to use it to try to go beyond it. So we imagine, or we see, or we think of, so whatever we see, whatever we think of, whatever we imagine, within that we try to experience the reality of what of the profound truth that is the substance of every perception. It's like when you look at a movie, mostly this is actually our very life. We're so fascinated with what appears on the screen, we're not at all interested in the screen itself. Because for a movie, the screen is of no significance. But for our life, every perception that we have, the screen on which that perception manifests itself is of the supreme importance. Because that is what makes the difference. Why are we so terribly happy about certain things and so terribly concerned and worried and unhappy about certain other things? It's only because we look at the surface of things. At the essence of everything, as the support of everything, it's like the screen that is the support of the movie. What is being shown in the movie has nothing to do with the screen. The screen simply provides the support for it. So this world and all of its experiences, intrinsically there's great importance in order to navigate this world properly. But if we ask the question, what is the ultimate reality, what is the ultimate truth of what we experience, we have a great deal of trouble. Because we don't see that truth anywhere, because we only look at the surface of things. But at the heart of everything is that background, that screen, is that which never changes. At the heart of everything that changes is that which does not change. So every moment of our life really should be devoted to that, not just to the times of meditation or prayer or spiritual practice. At every moment, we should make a distinction between what appears and what is essentially true. The things, the judging things by how they appear, is by their appearance, is extremely necessary for navigating this world. But if we want to, but that makes us, that leaves us quite unhappy. We can manage everything in this world. We can do wonderfully. We can make tremendous progress. We can create huge projects of every sort, even spiritual projects. We can have great congregations and great spiritual discussions and meetings and whatnot. We can do things on a spiritual, in a spiritual sense also, but still we'll be living on the surface level, subject to disappointment, subject to elation. We are very happy about certain things. We're very unhappy when those things go in the opposite direction. But the, if we can make this distinction mentally between what appears and what is the essence, between the appearance and the essence of things, then we can come to, slowly we can reorient ourselves. Whatever appears on the surface has its own importance, should be considered, should be dealt with. But ultimately, it is not of eternal significance. It comes and it goes. So to make a difference between what comes and goes and what is the essence, that is spiritual life. In every perception, whenever we deal with anyone, on the surface, things come and go. And I deal with that in its own way. I know very well how to handle all these things. That's wonderful. But my own life has to be founded on that which does not come and go. That which stays, which was always there, will always be there. That foundation, the screen on which life is seen. If you're sitting in a movie and you're watching a roller coaster and you think you're going to be, as the roller coaster goes down the hill and into a pool of water, all of this, this is how our, mostly our surface life is like that. Which is fine, there's nothing. This is how we have to live in order to navigate this world. But if, but at the same time, we should always remember there is something underneath which does not change. There is a reality which does not change. God, that infinite consciousness, that infinite essence, that is the truth. That is that which supports everything. That is that which is the essence. This, whatever is on the surface comes and goes. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's, it causes problems. So, he who sees the Supreme Lord as existing equal in all beings, as the imperishable among the perishable, he truly sees. Seeing, since by seeing equally God who is present alike everywhere, such a person will not injure the self by the self. Therefore, he attains the supreme goal. Injuring the self, how can you injure that which is infinite and eternal? That can never be changed or affected by anything, but your perception of it is easy to change. So the point is to remember, to feel the existence of that reality everywhere. So within us, within ourselves is the light, that is the point. What we see within ourselves, we see a physical entity, we see a we feel a psychological presence within ourselves. But in our hearts there is a light, there is a screen on which all these other things are seen, that light is everywhere. That light we have to try to see in other beings also. So if we, that is the real essence of what we have to do, to distinguish the appearance from the essence. Every appearance is an appearance on an essence. There is an essence behind every appearance. And that essence, that matrix, that screen, whatever you want to call it, is infinite, is eternal. It's infinite because you can't put any bounds on it. If you put bounds on it, it becomes finite. And for every boundary, there is an area beyond the boundary. So you cannot put any boundary. That is one of our mistakes, to think we can put a boundary on anything. Whenever you put a boundary on anything, there's always a space beyond the boundary. So it's impossible to, the existence of the of an infinite reality is an absolute necessity. One cannot get beyond that. But although we may admit it intellectually, we don't acknowledge its presence every day. The point is, what am I? I am not this body. I am not this mind. I am pure spirit. That is the idea that should be somewhere in the back of our minds. We should have this idea. I seem to be this body and this mind, but actually speaking, inside, this body and mind are appearing in my consciousness. This body and mind are appearing on an infinite reality, on an infinite screen. So that body and mind, they have come at a certain point, and they will also, at some other point, they will go. But there's something that does not come and does not go. I am that. I am not that. And within my every consciousness, within every thought, pratibodha viditam, I'm supposed to be able to see it in every conception. Within me, I see a reality. I have to feel the presence of that infinite, eternal reality within which my finite, temporary life is shown, is seen, is experienced. Everything that is finite is seen on an infinite screen. It is because of the presence of that infinite reality that I'm able to see the finite. Because of the presence of God, I can see this world. If it were possible for God to disappear, this world would also disappear. If the screen disappears, you don't see anything. You may project your movie, but if there's no screen there, that light will go out into infinite space. You will never be able to see it. So it is because God exists that this universe exists. And we tend to turn these things around. So in every part of our life, we should feel the presence of God. Feeling the presence of God is one of the great spiritual practices. If I wait until I come home, right now I'm doing business and I'm going to negotiate this and buy that and sell that and all that, that's fine. But every time, after some time, I should remember all these things are going on the surface of things. But really speaking, there is only God here. And that question which was asked in the Upanishad, suppose you say there's only God here, suppose there's only no God here. That itself would be impossible. As long as I'm able to consider the matter, as long as I see anything, there has to be something which does not change, otherwise I would not see anything. The fact that I'm a thinking, living person means that God has to exist. There's not a question whether God exists or not is absolutely determined by the fact that I feel that I exist. Those are the, in other words, God has to be the center of our thought, the center of our aspiration, the center of our consciousness. All the things that we do normally every day are done because God exists. There, the very presence of all finite things, the existence of finite things is seen only because that infinite reality exists. That is the thought that I should mull over in my mind, that I should consider, that I should devote my devotion to, that because I perceive that which is finite, that itself has to be a proof that God is the reality behind everything. God is the reason why I'm able to see that which appears to be not God. Without the presence of God, that which appears to be different, material, physical, mental, would not appear, could not appear at all. These are the thoughts that should go on in my consciousness. Following this trend of thought, I should not try to prove the existence of God. I should rather try to prove the existence of this world. God is self-evident and obvious. This world is the thing which is problematical. Does it appear? Does it not appear? Is it something, that is to be taken into account as it is and so forth? I should need proof of that. But we turn the thing around. We say, okay, this world is fine. I know exactly how to deal with it. Now, but God, I don't know. Spiritual reality, Brahman, Atman, well, I don't know. I need proof of that. I go here, I go there. Swami Vivekananda said, bring the Upanishads out of ourselves. That is where the truth lies. The fact that I exist immediately shows that the infinite, the pure, the eternal must exist. If God did not exist, I could not exist at all. So, really speaking, God's existence is obvious. My existence has to be, supported, and I need proof of that. That is how we should feel. And as we feel that consciousness becomes alive also in us. Otherwise, we just float on the surface of things. We see everything that changes, and we demand proof for the unchanging at the background of everything that changes. The background is self-evident because I am. In the Bible, there's that statement of Moses asked, in the burning bush, he was asked to go to Pharaoh and give a message that Pharaoh should free the Israelites, the Hebrew people who were confined, who were slaves in Egypt. And so why would the Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, why would he want to free? These are his workmen. Why would he want to do that? By whose authority am I asking Pharaoh to free all these people? And so Moses asked this burning bush, who shall I say sent me? And the voice came back, I am that I am. So it's the I am inside that we're all familiar with. That is what is obvious to every one of us, and that is God. That is that infinite and eternal. The existence of this world is what we should ask proof for.